Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 428. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 255, the John Peters Imaginary Corn Maze Experience.
Echo. Yeah, right from the beginning, this is different because the voice actor for John Peters, you know, the farmer, is announcing, and it's a different intro music as well because it's for the Corn Maze Experience. And John kind of felt obligated to help out at the radio station because Cecil isn't there, and it's because of John, but he's fine. But, you know, Cecil is kind of missing because of John Peters, but he's fine.
So John says that, you know, he, of course, has the invisible corn industry, and people have been asking him for years to do corn mazes with all of the things that a corn maze has. And here there's like a list of things, and sometimes it's nice, like, you know, the pumpkins and the cider and the running around, and then it gets disturbing, and the screaming and the zombies. And it's just a list of very pleasant things and really not pleasant things.
And he hasn't been able to do it all these years because he just doesn't have enough imagination. I mean, he has to use up so much imagination for an entire season of growing imaginary corn that he's plumb done in by the end of the harvest. But due to like several really big disasters with most of the people that buy his crop, he just hasn't been able to sell all his imaginary corn this year. And he's been spending the time just like making dynasties of scarecrows out in the fields and coming up with all their backstories and everything. And they've been talking to him and telling him how great it would be if he did a corn maze this year.
Yeah, he said one of the things I told him was, if you build it, they will scream. And I'm like, you know, I know that's been done before, but that would still make a very good t-shirt.
It would, yes.
Okay, so he's definitely going to do that, but before he goes into the whole experience, he's going to do a few of the things that Cecil would normally read to us. One thing, he announces that it's Spirit Week at the local high school, which is where the schools learn all about ghost culture, and it is really rude to actually wear a sheet with eye holes in it, because that's appropriating somebody else's culture.
Yeah. But he also does the sponsor, and the sponsor this week is Web, and that's with two bees, and it is an app that tells you how many spiders are in your home. And if you get the premium version, it will tell you where the spiders are.
I love that. I wrote that down too. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So we get done with that, and he has to sign an imaginary waiver. You close your eyes and imagine your signature. And after that, we're not really going to go through like a point by point thing of the whole experience. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure, but every time you're offered a choice, John Peters assumes we chose the worst possible option.
Like you have several options for paths to take in the maze, and two of them are kind of scary, and one of them is a giant man with a giant pumpkin for a head, and he's holding a rusty chainsaw. So you choose the path that has the, you know, scarecrow with the pumpkin head with the chainsaw, and he comes at you, and you have several options for what to do. Like, one of them is running away, and another one is grabbing hold of the chainsaw with your bare hands. So you grab a hold of the chainsaw with your bare hands. I mean, I've got notes here going, why would you choose to grab the chainsaw with your bare hands?
And it turns out it's a good thing, because I guess the melon man likes to eat flesh, I suppose, so that distracts him. And I don't know. And then there's like a shark in the maze for some reason, and the choice is to run away or to dive into the mouth of the shark. So you dive into the mouth of the shark.
And even John Peters seems a little startled that you're making these particular choices, but he's going to pause for a second and let everybody consult the almanac so we can see what the weather is. And the weather was an instrumental.
Yay.
But it was hard metal, which isn't usually my thing. But it was very enthusiastic hard metal.
Yes, it was. Actually, I wrote heavy-ish metal a little bit. I mean, it was kind of, it's like heavy metal, but it was a little poppy as well. So it was fine. I always love an instrumental, even if it's not my particular thing. It's always good to cheer on the instrumentals. Yay! And it was Struggle and Oppression by Another Day Done. And yeah, we liked it.
So we end up in the belly of the great corn shark whose mouth you dove into, and you're being digested, and you have like the choices are to like struggle and maybe he'll get sick and cough you back up again, or you could dive down further into the acid, which is what you do, and then a pneumatic tube snatches you up and suddenly you're in the northern Lithuanian mountains.
God, and there's this floating dog head behind you, and you can either go and seek shelter or you can actually turn around to the dog, which is wanting you to pledge your loyalty to him, and you do so, and so now you're stuck in servitude to a dog and the freezing cold, and you don't really have any clothes or any skin, and it goes on for like years, and Catherine at that point goes to me, this is really dark. And I went, yeah, I know.
And you're just like, after so long in the service of the great disembodied dog head, you're wondering like, are you even you anymore? I mean, is there some core of you that stays the same no matter what you go through? Or do all of your experiences change you so much that you're no longer the same person that you were? And you really need to think about this for a little bit, because you could end up being stuck here forever. And then all of a sudden, Cecil comes back.
And he's so happy. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry it took me so long. I was having such a great time with the corn maize and the cider and the goats with their human skin and their human faces, whatever. And he also, apparently after he got out of the maze, he sort of lost track of himself for like 6 hours afterwards, but he's back. He knows that he needs to come back and do his responsibilities, even though he was having so much fun.
And so he tells everybody he will definitely be here next week. So for now, good night, Night Vale. And John Peter says, nighty night, y'all. And that was where we ended it.
That's the end of the episode.
Now, I gotta tell you, I have never done a corn maze, and nope. I would really like to. However, most of the time when I see them around here, it's like part of a whole experience, and you have to pay something like $20 for a ticket to get in to do all the things, and it's usually geared more towards children. So if somebody with children would like to adopt me for a day and we could all go out to the corn maze, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I'd like that. Funny thing, I've heard from some people who grew up in the Midwest who really hate the idea of corn mazes, because if you are actually like near a real corn field, you are taught to never go into the cornfield, because if you get turned around, those things go on for miles. People have gotten lost and died in cornfields. So they're like, why would you make a maze of it? Oh my God. So I don't remember the other episodes that John Peters has been on, because I looked up, he's on the actors on IMDb. This is his 6th episode doing Night Vale.
Yeah, so, and I wonder if he's shown up on some of the live shows. It seems like he's got a real good voice for coming in and doing those like little snippets in the middle of an episode. I do think this is the only one that he's ever actually headlined.
Probably, yes, exactly. He also does the Drunk History show. I wondered where I'd heard him before.
I've never actually sat down to listen to enough of that. I need to do that.
I think I've seen a couple episodes, but yeah, it's fun, unless they get really, really drunk and then it's just uncomfortable, but whatever. Okay, so that's it for Night Vale. So I believe you said that you watched another episode of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yes, I watched one. I actually watched a few this week, and I watched one right before we started recording, and it was the 9th episode of the 1st season, Crisis Point, and it's the one where Ensign Mariner takes over Boimler's holodeck program and does an entire movie of the Lower Decks characters, and yes. It is so freaking meta. It is delightful.
Oh my God, they just never stop with the self-referential humor. Holy crap.
Just even the fact that they're having to duck the titles in the little intro, and yes. The titles are all so Next Generation, it just makes my heart sing.
It's just wonderful. It's such, the whole thing's a love letter to Star Trek, but in general, but also Star Trek Next Generation in particular.
Yes.
I can't remember how that episode ended.
Well, Mariner she's like working out her frustrations because her mother, the captain, has told her to go ahead and do therapy, which she hates. So, of course, she goes on this murderous rampage on the holodeck and then ends up fighting herself because Boimler had written this whole program using everybody's private logs so that they have all of their personalities and everything. So Mariner and Mariner get into a fight and they manage to work out both what is bothering them and what they love about being on the Cerritos. So it was very cute. And unfortunately, Boimler found out from the program that the captain is Mariner's mother, and he's pretty sure that she is going to like cause him to disappear if he admits it. And he doesn't know how to lie. So I thought that was great. In in that we had this whole wonderful episode, but since it's a holodeck, it brings everything back to the beginning, so there aren't any real changes, except for the fact that there really is now. Now, we've got his knowledge in play of that.
So freaking clever, man. The writing in this is just so good. Not just the dialogue, which is wonderful, but the plotting is really good in this series.
And I was delighted that Rutherford, like, he wanted to confront his boss in the holodeck, and what he wanted to do was tell his boss how much he admires the hell out of him.
I
and they
know.
Like, they end the holodeck thing with the two of them deciding, you know, him and the holodeck version deciding that they're going to go off with their own ship and repair things on their own time. And it's just, so heartwarming.
So sweet.
And then, of course, Ensign Tendi has to make very clear that not all Orions are pirates. She said there are some Orions that haven't done any pirating for 5 years.
That is something that's going to come up again and again. Her just like facing up to those stereotypes that people have about Orions and how many of them are actually true. So, yeah. Well, what I was watching, because I was, once again, I haven't started up my Netflix again. I will. I definitely will. But my friends across the street have an RV, and so they have been going out camping every weekend, and so I get to watch their Netflix. And what I watched this weekend was I finally started the final season of Killing Eve. And you've never even watched one episode of that,
have you? No, I haven't.
Well, so of course it's the same writer and creator as Fleabag, so I think the dialogue is always very clever, but it gets super dark. You're never entirely sure who is safe and who is not safe. And I'm telling you right now, I mean, major characters have gotten offed on that show. And I'm like, oh, wow, yipe. But it's like darkly quirky at times, I suppose. And I was talking about it with Wade, and he had not quite gotten into it because he couldn't get a handle on what the plot was. And I realized, yeah, the plot does meander a bit. I like it, but it's probably not for everybody. And it is interesting that I started this most recent season, the final season, and I haven't watched the previous season in, I mean, well over a year. And there's a lot going on with the plot, and it's a little complicated. And I had to tell myself, I am not going to rewatch the third season. I'm just going to tell myself they're trying to beat the bad guys. That's it. Move on. Go on from there. So, and I think you probably can. That's fine.
Well, some things that I have been watching. I understand why you were asking me about Mayor of Kingstown if I had already run into the character of Bunny's cousin. Because, dear, spoilers, doesn't end well.
No. Yeah, when you were talking about her, you're like, I said, have they introduced her? And I had this idea, like, she got introduced and, spoilers, offed in the same episode. But I guess not. I guess she lasted an episode, I suppose?
A few episodes. She's actually scolded Mike a few times about him not looking out for Bunny enough, I think. So, which is probably why Bunny's, you know, bros were teasing Mike about his cousin, really liking him. But yeah. Oh, well, to the family and friends of Bunny's cousin. That was, just to make sure that there are real stakes going on in this show.
It is true. There are real stakes, and she was cool, and I'm sorry she's gone, but I do feel like she was introduced and gotten rid of so quickly that it very much feels like Women in Fridge Syndrome, where she was really just introduced because there's going to be some character development because of her dying, and that's what her main purpose was. And I don't know. I mean, it felt awfully fast. I'm like, oh, wow, we just met her.
I don't know. She actually has had several episodes, but I got to be honest, I kind of had that feeling when she was introduced that she was like, Bunny really likes her. He's so proud of her. He helped her set up her salon and everything. Like, oh, she's not going to be here for long, is she?
Yeah, no. It's a shame.
Yeah.
There will be some fallout from that.
And also, last thing that we have watched, Nathan and I watched the first episode of Chaos.
What'd you think?
Oh my God. I can really see what you're talking about with the idea that it is so delightful to recognize who these people are and what the heck's going on and what they're interpreting everything, but they're putting all their own little twists on it. Like,
it's amazing.
Hera and having that whole room of confession booths. That's the tongues of the oracles or the people that hear the confession. I guess not oracles, they're the people who hear the confession. And they have their tongues cut out so they can't tell anybody else about it.
Yikes.
But yeah, I was really glad that you hadn't told me anything else about who was on here, because I was delighted by two other actors. There is Janet Teer. She was the food critic in the movie Menu. And I'm just like sitting there going, where have I seen this one? Where have I seen this woman? Oh, yes. So, and that her playing a bitchy version of Hera seems very appropriate because, like, you know, you find out that Dionysus is coming to visit Zeus for breakfast. And you hear about the fact that Zeus had had sex with Dionysus' mother and Hera turned her into a bee. And Dionysus walks in and Hera's like, would you like some honey? So just really evil. But the other one was Billy freaking Piper showing up as Cassandra. That was great.
Oh my God. I saw that. I was watching it with Wade. I was like, oh my God, it's Billy Piper. Holy cow.
So yeah, and it's reminding me quite a bit of The Wicked and the Divine, just with the idea of these archetypes of Greek mythology in modern day and all of these relationships playing off each other. And now there's some big overarching plot because of a prophecy to take down Zeus. So yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, they packed a lot into that first episode, the whole story of Orpheus and Eurydice.
Oh yeah.
And what happens to her. And I was a little disappointed because when, you know, what happened to Eurydice happened, I was waiting to see the symbol of a viper, like a company stamped somewhere. They might have decided that was a bridge too far.
I guess I looked for it as well and I didn't see it. I'm not saying that it's not there. There may be, I can't remember. I may have to do another rewatch. The thing is, it is so visually rich, everything that's going on in every episode. The cinematography is gorgeous. I'm sure there's a lot of like CGI stuff going on, but you could really linger over every frame. So there may have been symbolism that I missed at some point. It means I just need to watch it again.
I did notice that Eurydice had a ring that was in the shape of a snake, but I don't know if that was... because she didn't die because of her ring, so I'm not exactly sure what that was all about. But I agree with you that that pop song that Orpheus sings to everybody in the concert, that was really good.
Right? Yeah, seriously. It's so, we've talked about this before. I mean, basically, he was going to be performing. He's one of the most popular pop singers in this kind of universe they've created. And so he had to do this amazing song that he wrote for Eurydice and everything. And I'm sure the creators of the show told the music writers, they're like, oh yeah, write us a really successful pop song. And honestly, if it was that easy, everybody would do it all the time. So I was very impressed with what they came up with.
Yes, very much so. So yeah, looking forward to the rest of the episodes in that season.
Nice, very nice. Okay, last thing before we go. I just happened to be listening to one of our old episodes. And yes, we do listen to our old episodes. It's not egotistical. It's like a little time capsule of what was going on.
A little bit of comfort watching, listening, yeah, whatever.
Yes. So I ran across the episode where we were talking about Twin Peaks The Return. And I was like, oh man, I want to watch that again. So I've been watching it just episode by episode. I started with the final episode of the original series to kind of like kick me into it. And I've been enjoying it. It's actually very interesting. I didn't watch the third episode because that has the barfing scene with the Garmin Boza. And I never bought that one off of Amazon and everything. But I was watching it and really trying to pay attention, you know, not to have it on in the background. I wanted to really absorb it and get everything. And I got to the episode, the black and white bit with the giant and the sparkles and everything. And I found myself hitting the little skip forward 10-second button. I'm like, yes, yes. All right. Yes. Fine. Oh God. So it just a little too slow. Just a little too slow.
I've said it many times and I'll say it again. I think a big part of David Lynch's directorial style can be summed up by fuck your ideas about pacing.
Oh boy, it sure is, man. Anyway, other than that, I still have been really enjoying it and I'm looking forward. I want to say that the Ben Horn episode where he's talking about, I think, his father and a red wagon or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's coming up, I want to say. I don't think that was in the third episode that I skipped. It remains one of the moments that I always remember about watching it the first time. And I'm really looking forward to hearing it again because the actor just delivered it so well.
And Ashley Judd, you've gotten to her episode with her husband, the guy with the cancer patient. Like, God, it's Ian from Mayor of Kingstown. I did not get that. But then again, I didn't know who he was when we were watching that show before.
Nope. But I had to get a screen cap. Well, not a screen cap. Do you know Amazon doesn't let you get screen caps? I think they're trying to prevent you from doing that. You can actually, like, you have the the screen paused or the screen's running and you hit the little screen cap button and you'll have the little camera thing. And then you look at the picture and it's completely black. And I'm like, I don't even know how you guys do that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, with AI now, and they're getting better and better at doing like not just still images, but actual videos, they probably don't want to make it easier for people to take actors' faces and make them do things.
Yeah. Speaking of AI, I'll just throw this in there. So, you know, the new company that I'm working for, they send out this newsletter every week, and they got some complaints about this one image, and it is an AI-generated image. And the complaints were kind of like, I don't know, it was a judge who's kind of taking a person to task, and the person is a Latina woman, and she's young. And so some people had a problem with the fact that it's a Latina woman being yelled at, and some people had a problem with it's an old guy yelling at a young woman. And apparently some people had a problem with the fact that it's an AI image. So if you are concerned about AI and you don't like a company using it, I'm going to tell you right now, go ahead and contact them and give them some feedback, because that's getting changed. So that's kind of, yeah, I know. And I'm going to say for the record, that wasn't an image that I made. So I'm going to be doing something different. So yeah, it is actually worth your time. If you see something and it's an image that you're just like, it bothers you, whether it's AI or something else about it, send them a message. You never know. I mean, there was a person actually taking that feedback and going, got it, we're going to change that. So, yay.
There has been, I think it's, what is the phrase that was going viral on Twitter? It was 20 gallons of water or something. And it's about, because of course it takes a lot of server power to generate these images and to save these images, and they're everywhere and everybody's using it. Well, you got to cool down the servers somehow. So it's a gigantic use of resources to generate these AI images. And it's really weird to me that we're doing this, because we're allowing people who honestly think that the artist is the, you know, the human being is the weak point in the chain. And if they can get rid of that, then they can make everything the way they want to. And you got to just tell companies that you don't like the images, because that's the only way that they're going to know is if people keep giving them feedback saying, this looks like the airbrushed crap that you get at a state fair. Let's not do this.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my tip for the day.
Yay.
But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Hugh has had several reviews come up this week, including a romance, which I wasn't sure Hugh was actually into romance, but he really liked it. It's Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh's new movie.
I think that would possibly be why he decided to review that, because of those two actors.
Yeah, and he said they did a really good job. So if you want more of those reviews, you'll have to check that out and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So next week, no Night Vale? Maybe Night Vale? Let me see. Time is weird. No, not quite.
I think the timing is just off this month, so we will have to finish up some things. I mean, we've got one more episode of The Crown left, and I've been putting it off because I just know it's the final episode of the whole series, I think. They ended it there.
Yep.
Yeah, so gotta watch that. One more episode left of season one of Star Trek Lower Decks, so I will definitely be watching that. I've got a few episodes left of season three of Mayor of Kingstown, so maybe I can catch up on that too.
Maybe we can each also watch another episode of Time Bandits, because I've only seen the one episode.
Yeah, that'd be good too.
And then, of course, we've got to do our horror movie watching list for the month. So.
Yes. What do you think about the idea of Exorcist 3, watching that?
I think that's a great idea, because you were saying that I don't have to have watched Exorcist 2 to enjoy
it? No, it has like nothing to do with Exorcist 2. It does tie into Exorcist 1. It was written by William Blatty, who did the first book. So it is based on an actual book that is part of the, like, I don't know, Exorcist universe, whatever. But they had to shoehorn an exorcism in there because the book was like, I think the book was called Legion, but they were like, oh, no, we've got to tie it in and call it Exorcist 3. And then they probably realized towards the end of filming, shit, we don't have an exorcism yet. So, but it's George C. Scott, who is really good. And there's actually some funny bits with him and his friendship with a priest, which is like, surprised me. But it gets dark fast, and you've got Brad Dourif, and he's amazing. He is so unsettling.
Nice, because I always like my comfort watching horror movies, but it would be cool to actually see a movie that I haven't seen before. Also, Wade may have some suggestions for us too, because he likes him a horror movie, and he knows some that are scary without being gory, which I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I like.
Yep, it's gotta be scary. Gore is kind of optional. I really prefer the supernatural stuff. I guess maybe it feels too real if it's like, you know, serial killer stuff, whatever. But not as fun, I guess.
So we have our homework set up for us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Now, after that, and you can either go and seek shelter. Sorry, another car.
Not Orson C. Scott. Ebenezer from Christmas Carol.
George C. Scott?
George C.
They just never stop self-referentiating. God, they just never start. One more time.